You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Can We Beat the 62 Mets edition of Sharing Sox. I'm Southside Sox duty geezer Lee Allen. With me, my son and West Coast correspondent Will. The White Sox sitting at, as we record on Friday at noon, it's the 19th of April, are sitting at 3:15 and heading to Philadelphia, which may be the, other than the two Atlanta games, the toughest team they've played this season. But we will see, three-game series there and then on to Minnesota, which may be a little easier. Minnesota's barely got any walking bodies. Well. Before we get into how the team's doing now and the much discussion of that, even the Atlantic today, national piece, I mean, locally, yes, we make fun and laugh at the White Sox or cry or whatever our emotional direction is. The Atlantic had a huge piece today, just laughing at the White Sox. It's kind of humiliating when you get there. But I want to say Tim Anderson is back in town. The Marlins are here to play the Cubs. And sure. Tim, of course, is a big interview thing when coming back to Chicago. He's having a decent year, much better than last year's debacle, but nothing near what he was when he was hitting 300-something. He's in 260-something. He's doing fine.
That's not bad.
But
yeah.
One of the interview questions was just, how's it been? And he said, and this is Miami, a team who's really suffering. It's good to be on a team where they care about winning. It's the same thing Jose Abreu said.
Which is crazy because
it goes back
Miami
to Keenan
is...
Middleton, of course, but Tim and Jose are guys who've been on the team for years and years, and he's talking, and he admitted his own problems last year. Obviously he had to, but his off the field problems affecting him and so forth. But he's saying, guys, you want to be with people who want to win. You want to play with people who want to win. And who are these guys?
I think it's that's really telling because Miami's really terrible. So the fact that you would be on Miami and say, wow, it feels good to be around people who are trying to win, which just says a lot. I mean, it says a lot because that's actually a bit more of a reflection on the teammates than it even is about the organization because – organizationally,
it's all about the teammates. Yeah.
Organizationally, Miami doesn't seem to be trying to win all that much themselves, but it tells you that the guys are going out there and trying to win. They're not seeing success necessarily, but they're out there trying to win. And I'm not saying that the current White Sox aren't trying to win baseball games, the players themselves, they probably are. It's just it's a totally different group of guys than who Tim played with, you know, with the exception of just a couple. When it comes to who is on the field right now, it's a very different group of guys.
I think when you talk about don't want to win, I'm sure when they go out there, you're playing hard. You're running after the ball. You're concentrating the best you can.
Not necessarily.
Are you preparing? I think that's what the question is. And that's been the question. Yeah. People have raised that question for years about these guys. Are they preparing? Are they doing? Because so much now is video work and stats work and knowing that pitcher X's slider moves 8 inches horizontally, you know, and 2 inches down, whatever they be. It's a learning process. And are they not going through? It's an intense learning process every day.
Well, and honestly, when it comes to that kind of stuff, that actually is organizational, because the White Sox don't have the analytics team that other teams have. You know, they've got a couple names. Like I've seen the comparison, and the White Sox have something like 3 people in that department, which is insane. You know, at Dodger Stadium, it's like, you know, dozens, and the White Sox have
even small market, because you names. Go to Tampa Bay, which is so successful year after year on essentially no budget. They have a huge analytics department.
Yeah, that's how they win games. I mean, if you are going to not have a huge budget, if you're not going to put money into the team, that's the way to win games. That's how a team like Tampa Bay succeeds year after year after year, is breaking down those numbers and doing the analytical work that's required. If you're not going to load your team with stars, obviously teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, they're just packed. They're doing a ton of analytical work, but they're also packed with a lot of raw talent. Teams like Tampa Bay and some of the other small market teams that are faring very well, they rely on these things, and they realize that that is kind of the only way they're going to win games, is piecing together this perfect analytical puzzle. And the White Sox aren't trying to put the puzzle together, and they're not trying to have players with talent. So when you have that combo, you're looking at being 3-15 on April 19th, which, you know, obviously you can say, well, it's early, you know, you don't know anything through the first 18 games. Well, sure. If this team was stacked with guys who know how to play the game and are major league ready and should be starting at the major league level, then I could possibly say, yeah, they need to get it together. I don't know what's going on here, but obviously they're not a 3-15 team. This is a 3-15 team. I mean, the guys who are going out there every day have a very small chance of actually winning a baseball game. And you can't really say too much about the actual players in that scenario. You know, if you're going out there and your teammates are guys who really shouldn't be at the major league level anymore, well, you can't really expect to win games against major league baseball players. And that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, it's embarrassing. It's disgusting. Add in the level that they're trying to get $2 billion for a new stadium. Why would we ever give you that? You know, you're making no effort to win whatsoever with what you have. And I'm not saying the guys. I do think when the guys are out there, honestly, especially these kind of guys who are just trying to stay in the show at this point, they're probably out there playing hard and trying to win baseball games. But they're up against actual MLB teams. And, you know, it's not to say that there aren't a couple major leaguers on the White Sox, but it's essentially like saying, let's take a good, really good college team and put them against Major League Baseball team every day. You're not going to win much. You might win every now and then by some sort of person having a great day, usually a pitcher. In our case, it looks like it's going to be Crochet. But it's hard to win consistently, and I don't see a world where this can possibly turn around in any sort of remarkable fashion, or even any sort of lukewarm fashion in 2024. There's just nothing there.
Or 2025. I mean, even the Atlantic.
Sure.
There was an article somewhere else today, Yahoo or somewhere, about, yeah, the White Sox are toast for a long time. And
yeah, I mean, even if
suddenly, unless Jerry suddenly decides, oh, I'm going to die next year, so what the heck? Here's another couple $100 million to buy free agent. I mean,
honestly, then looking at the free agent list, you're still not turning around to become a really great team next year. So I think there's no reason that they would even spend, and we know they won't. You know, we're not stupid. We sit here on a almost weekly basis.
We've been
analyzing
fans for
this
a very
stuff.
Long time.
we know that they're not going to spend. But even 2025, 2026 aside, 2024, there is no outside of a movie plot where, you know, this group of ragtag guys finds a way to get it done in, you know, sort of a Slumdog Millionaire scenario where everything's together.
I like Damn Yankees, where you sell your soul to the devil.
Well, they've already done that, and it's not really paying off. When your team's owned by the devil and the devil's signing your paychecks, it's tough to make that transformation. But there's just nobody there. And, you know, I feel bad for these guys. I feel really, really bad for the young guys. And I get that this does give them an opportunity to play. But what it really does is you've worked for this your entire life. You get to the majors and you're on a team that is, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, very much on pace to destroy the Mets record for losses. I mean, at the current rate we are going, it's actually not even going to be close. And I think obviously it should, you know, kind of cool down in some way, I would hope. But as I've been saying for the last, you know, 5 minutes, I don't see what that way is. You know, it's you get Luis Robert back and okay, now you've got a guy. You get Moncada back in a couple months, few months, 6 months, who knows if he comes back at all. I just wouldn't bring him back at all.
You know, and that's, we've been talking about, you know, the injury thing. Oh, the injuries. Aloy's hitting 111. So getting Aloy back is not a huge deal. Even Luis, who was a great baseball player, is not having a great season. He had second game of the season, he had two homers and go, wow, yeah, this is it, boy, superstar. And I think he struck out half the time at the plate.
Well, and then, you know, some of that can be because of whatever the injury effects.
But they got
were.
Hurt running to first.
Right. So, you know, I don't anticipate Luis Robert having a bad year unless he is just extremely unmotivated. And, you know, when you have the sort of five tool set that Luis Robert has, it can be tough to motivate to go out there and lose almost every single night. I mean, 3-15, you know, we're talking, let's say the pace keeps up, 6-30, 9-45. I mean, this is, I get that your pocketbook should be motivating you to do these things, but it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for a star player to go out there and play in these games.
And he played through it all last year.
He did.
Because we both talked about it in 2022 that he was kind of phoning it in by the end. But last year, despite the abysmal season, he worked hard all year. I don't know if you can expect him to do it again.
I mean, the worst thing for Luis Robert right now is his contract. You know, if he was going into free agency after this year, we'd probably see a stunning season from Luis Robert. If he was in a platform year, you know, like what we're seeing from Juan Soto, who has been better, more consistent, of course. He's one of the best players in the league. But, you know, the problem with Luis is nobody's signing him after 2024. So the question is he going to muster it up this year, or is he going to kind of just skate by and get through this thing until he can get eventually to a platform year? I don't know. I don't know what he's going to be like when he comes back. I mean, he's still far and away the best player on the team. You know, and then look at the pitching. You've got one guy, Crochet, who's been really hot, didn't have a great outing, but, you know, he's been really good. Well, if he stays good, you have to get rid of him. You know, you've got no trade chips. You've got none. So,
yeah, it's very because the one you think was when you get to the pitching, I think we expected the pitching to be the very bottom of the league. It's not. It's not good, but the pitching is much better than to be expected. The hitting is beyond abysmal. And the big deal, man, Chris Getz, we're going to have defense. Defense is going to be the big thing. You know, they are next to last in Baseball Reference and defensive runs saved. And I think they're 26th in the Fangraphs def category. The defense is abysmal. But yeah, the one you figure you got to have his trade use because he's a rental anyway, is Michael Soroka. His ERA is up to 6.98. You say, well, did he have bad luck? No, his FIP is 6.87. He stinks.
And also, Soroka would have to have an absurdly out of character first half of the season to be trade bait of any real value. Like,
well,
I'm not
he had
saying
to have 2018. 2018-2019 when he was really, really good. But yeah, he hasn't been good for a very long time.
So that was 5 and 6 years ago, you know.
Fetty has been good. I watched Fetty's game on Wednesday. very good. I mean, not just that he did well as far as getting people out, but the ball was moving. The ball was in the corners. It was up and down. It was all over. It was a really well-pitched game, which is, incidentally, it was the second half of a doubleheader where a kid came out there, Jonathan Cannon, and had a really well-pitched game. Following Nick Nastrini's really well-pitched game. You wonder about those, and you got to hope that it can continue. Remember how bad the Sox have been historically, even when they were not a horrible team, just basically bad, struggling against pitchers just up. We talk about this. Oh, this guy's just up from the minor leagues, and we got two hits in seven innings. I think that's not a Sox thing necessarily. I think it's a major league thing because we talk about all the research that's done. You don't really research the guys who are in AAA. You start the, I mean, you research it, but you don't do, it's not the incredible analytics that we have at the major league level.
So totally.
Our team, now teams are not going to be fooled by Nastrini or by Cannon. They're going to have all the video. They're going to have all the radar readings. They're going to have all that stuff on StatCast. It's, you know, it looks like ICU in a really good hospital.
They each get one game of the eye test, kind of. And then once it seems like they're going to stay in the major leagues, then teams really start scouting the hell out of them. And, you know, it's possible that you get past that. You know, I'm not writing these guys off.
No, they look good. They look good.
They really could. I mean, a lot of really great pitchers came up and had a good first start and remain great pitchers. So it's not out of the question. The pitching has been, if we're looking for a silver lining in this mess so far, it has been the pitching. You know, they have pitched well enough that we would be able to compete in games if we had a single person who could hit the ball.
And we have two guys who are hitting the ball right now. One of which you and I have talked about, let's get rid of him for about 5 years now, Gavin Sheets, who was hitting a ton. And I watched him in right field. He didn't have any difficult plays, but routine fly balls he caught. He went in the right direction and got there and caught the ball. That's not a big accomplishment. Most high school players do that. But it is an accomplishment for Gav. They say how hard he's worked. Well, good. I'm glad he has. And maybe
maybe he'll get dealt. You know, if he keeps this up, maybe he'll get to go play somewhere where it's worth playing. You know, it's certainly possible. I don't see a world where Gavin Sheets is really, you know, by the end of the year, putting up any sort of mind-blowingly impressive numbers.
It seems unlikely. And Paul DeJong is the other one who's hitting well, and he is a definite trade candidate. For sure, because he's a rental.
So yeah, somebody, I mean, you're still not going to get much, though. That's the thing. No, like, but these are trade candidates.
You get something.
Yeah, you'll get a fourth, fifth tier kind of guys for a guy like Paul DeJong. Yeah. But he's been around long enough that nobody's foaming at the mouth, but somebody might need him at the deadline. And, you know, people buy at a major, major inflated number at the deadline. So it's possible that you could get something in return for Sheets or DeJong. We should take our break here, though, and we will come back. And I'm going to pose an interesting question for you regarding Garrett Crochet that a coworker, a friend of mine who's a White Sox fan posed to me. So we'll hang in there. We'll be right back on Sharing Sox. Welcome back to Sharing Sox. We, you know, talked about the only thing you could talk about in the first half, how poorly things are going. But let's talk about Crochet, where things tend to be going well. A coworker of mine posed an interesting question that kind of speaks on how bad our offense is and sort of how decent Crochet has been. At the end of 2024, will Garrett Crochet have a higher WAR or win total?
That's a nasty question.
He's at a 0.8 WAR right now, and he's got a team that can't score runs or win games.
And he has one win.
And he has one win. So the wins are just outpacing the WAR right now. Now, keep in mind, to win games, the White Sox technically have to score. You know, so if Crochet has a great game, the White Sox do have to score at least one run. In that scenario, to win a game. That has been proving very difficult. I believe we're already
Six shutouts. Yeah.
Six shutouts, which beats last year or ties the entirety of last year and beats two out of the last 3 years. So we are a team that mostly doesn't score runs. That's one third of our games, for you stat nerds out there, where we have not scored a run. One third of our games.
More than a third.
Right. What do you think? Do you think Crochet has a higher WAR or a higher win total at the end of 2024?
It's not more than a third. I was thinking we just played 17 games. We played 18. I think, and I will put in here as an explanatory thing, I don't think he will pitch every fifth game through the year. He just, not because he's not doing it very well, but because he's pitched very, very little in the last 3 years, and you just can't burn this kid out and ruin him. You just can't do that, although they're probably inclined to. We've got more pitchers, starting pitchers coming in. We got the guy whose name we won't say, which I don't know why the hell they got him. We have no fan base. Wednesday's doubleheader, there might have been 200 people in the stands. And announced attendance is 11,000, but that's just because of season tickets that corporations have bought that nobody's sitting in.
If your announced attendance is 11,000, then you definitely only had a couple thousand in the ballpark.
Oh, yeah. It was maybe 2,000 or 3,000. I say, I did the game, so I'm watching every foul ball that goes up, and I can see the sections that have two people in them all the way around the park. And I'm sure the upper deck was closed.
I would have been like, hey, let's just not announce it, guys. Like,
I think it's the rules.
I mean, they have to report it. Yeah, they have to report it. But holy cow, an announced attendance of 11,000. That's the Expos,
that's
man.
That's twice that's been the case. And it wasn't a bad day. It was a fairly pleasant day and a doubleheader. Double games of baseball for free, you know, free. Anyhow, so he's not going to start 30 times. I mean, he shouldn't. They just should not do that. But let's say he even gets 20, 25 starts. He'll win. I'm going to go more wins, but close. Like, I think he can deliver. I mean, if he keeps going like he is, he'll deliver 4 WAR. And I think he could get 6 or 7 wins by shutting people out enough.
Okay. All right. Well, this will be a fun thing to track because I'm on the other side. I think Crochet will keep it up. I really like how he looks. So I'm going to go at 4.5 WAR for Garrett Crochet, and I'm going to go 4 wins. He's already got one. So, you know,
yeah.
I am just saying he won't get 4 more the rest of the year, which I realize is an absurd prediction, but I'm going to take it. I'm not going to bet money on it, but I'm going to take it in this circumstance. I'm going to say Crochet higher WAR than wins, and you are going to say higher wins than WAR.
But close.
Well, close. I think
I'm not going, he's going to blow that WAR out of the water. No, very close.
I mean, I think if I lose, I'm losing by 1.5. Yeah, I certainly don't think there's a world where my WAR prediction loses by, you know, 11. I think it will be very close, but this will be fun to follow. And I'm excited for this. This will be a good thing to check in on at the end of the year, because I actually don't know which one is going to come out on top, which is crazy when we're talking about your ace. You know, imagine, you know, talking about Tyler Glasnow and saying, is he going to have more wins than WAR? Or more WAR than wins. I mean, it's just bonkers to have this conversation about Nace, but it's actually a somewhat of a reality for the Chicago White Sox. It's bleak. I will also say, as we're making predictions, I am going to say that we do beat the Mets as the most losing team in the history of Major League Baseball.
Really?
Because what do we need? We need 120.
Yeah.
And we're on pace for 135. So yeah. I got a 15-game cushion to be wrong on this. That's a big cushion. And I realize it's early, but that's a big cushion. And, you know, as we've talked about before, if Crochet keeps it up, if Soroka's decent, if DeJong keeps it up, those guys are going to go. So then you're talking about playing August and September without them. I mean, how do you not lose 40 games the last 2 months?
You get Luis back before too long. I don't know that you get Yuan back ever. I mean, maybe they're saying after the All-Star break, maybe. If he's back, you know.
If whatever. We weren't getting Luis back, I would say the 135 is accurate. You know, I would say the pace is accurate. I wouldn't even require this cushion. But, you know, 15-game cushion with this team, this lineup, I think we could get to 120.
You're bad-mouthing the lineup. I'm going to get in here. You're bad-mouthing. Yes, it is by far the worst in the major leagues. It's not even close consideration. I mean, it's way, way, way. Now, of our starters as listed on Baseball Reference by who plays the most at the given position, only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the starters are hitting below 200. One's hitting below 100. And then Sosa is now the third baseman. He's hitting below 200. Shoemake is your big backup infielder. He's hitting 192. Lois, the DH, he's hitting 118. I mean, you could put an all below the Mendoza line lineup out there, and it would just be kind of a normal day if you gave a day off to DeJong and Sheets.
Why would you ever go watch this team?
Obviously nobody did on Wednesday. I mean, they just didn't know.
I'm like, which apparently they're putting pretty strict limits on. So I'm not sure.
It's $15 for the milkshake too. You could probably go someplace, take the recipe. I mean, it's fairly basic. It's like a s'more, and go to your favorite malt shop, and they could probably stir that up for you for $15, and you don't have to go and watch a terrible baseball team.
I'm sure Sonic already has one of these on their menu. You can probably go to Uptown right now, go to the Sonic, and get the same milkshake for $6. So I guess that's the reason to go is the milkshake. I don't know. But Reinsdorf, I mean, if he wasn't evil, he'd be in quite a pickle right now. You know, it's feeling like we're inching closer and closer to the Oakland scenario every single day. Hopefully it doesn't come to that kind of thing. But
it's interesting that talk about the 78, the new stadium thing and the $2 billion, it's disappeared, which is scary. Because when it disappears, you think maybe it's gone behind closed doors. And whether they're paying off politicians or they're scaring politicians or whatever they're doing, it's possible. And I don't think they can scare the governor. He's just too damn rich to worry about it. But I don't think
that's happening. I just don't. I don't think we're going to all of a sudden find out that this thing is moving forward because of, you know, backroom dealings. I think if we're not talking about it now, it's because it's an insane ask. It's an insane ask. It's not an annoying ask. It's not a, oh man, they really put the city in a pickle, we don't want to lose the White Sox ask because they're asking for $400 million. No, this is an insane ask. This is unhinged. This is, I would think, one of the biggest asks in the history of stadium building, to ask a city to put up $2 billion. I mean, it's absolutely insane to ask for this amount of money. I don't think this is like a, we're going to find out all of a sudden that this thing went through and now we're going to be on the hook for this money.
Well,
I think that could be the case if it were a more realistic number, but $2 billion it's unhinged.
Oh, just, and of course, you don't live here, so you don't see the Sun-Times. Did I forward the Sun-Times piece to you? The real money behind the 78 is an Iraqi hyphen an Anglo-Iraqi businessman who has not been allowed into the United States for crimes of, I forget what there's a definition for crimes, really bad crimes. He was convicted in France of fraud. I mean,
well, I'll tell you this, if I were that
moral
guy,
turpitude, I think that's what he's got.
If I were that guy and I was trying to get involved in American sports, I'm going to my secretary and I'm saying, get me Reinsdorf on the phone.
Yeah.
I need a guy whose moral compass hasn't been functioning for so long that he even picks up this phone call. And you know, Jerry is just so evil and so disgusting that this guy made the right choice. You know, I obviously don't like it at all. But, you know, if you're going to try to get involved, Reinsdorf's the guy to call. If you have a shady past and aren't allowed in the country, I'm going to Reinsdorf. He's the first guy I'm calling to get involved in pro sports. I mean, I think the 78 thing.
Probably John Fisher didn't take his call.
I think there is no way that this project moves forward with city funding. It's just too much money. It's too much money. It's so unbelievably greedy. I think there's a world where he could have asked for another number that I view as insane, and say, hey, I'm going to put in this much. And, you know, we want 500 mil, which I would still be very upset about, but I could see them folding in that scenario. But 2 billion is so unhinged that there's no way to spin it positively to your public. There is no way to spin it in a city like Chicago.
I don't think there's any way to spin half a billion, because, yeah, they want the TIF, you know, the tax increment financing, which was meant to help poor neighborhoods, not the South Loop.
Not billionaires, too.
Yeah, and not billionaires. But that, at least you could say, well, this is money you're not getting on an empty piece of land anyway. You're not getting it anyway, so we get to keep it. That's been the argument many places, not Chicago, many, many places for funding for sports stadiums, which is insane, but it's at least accurate. Then they want the sales taxes from the area. Well, if people come and eat at a restaurant in that block of that 70 area, they're not eating at the restaurant across the street in the South Loop. So you're actually taking, it's not, oh, this is money that wasn't coming in. This is money that was coming in. In fact, it was going to people, it was coming via people who are running their own businesses, minding their own business, trying to do a good job, paying their taxes like good citizens. And you're taking it all away from them to give it to these incredibly horrible millionaires, billionaires. And it's not just Jerry, this Stephen Ross guy, who's the head of Related Companies, which is the parent company of Related Midwest. And then I forget his name now, but the Iraqi guy. And I'm not accusing him because he's an Iraqi. I'm accusing him because he's a convicted criminal.
Yeah, yeah. Totally, totally. Yeah, and I agree with you. They build this new shiny thing. You're not bringing business to the small businesses around. You're bringing business to the shiny thing. And you're taking business from the small businesses in the surrounding area. It's just delusional. It's so, so unbelievably greedy and dirty and yucky. But the good news is I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't.
No, I don't either. I hope not. But I don't think it is. I think they'll end up probably staying at the GERF.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Jerry's going, well, if I die, whoever buys the team will move it to somewhere. No, because if you die, whoever gets the team might care about baseball.
Yeah. And honestly, the whole like, oh, well, I'll move the team thing, it doesn't work when you're going to lose 130 games. It just doesn't. When you treat your fans like crap and all you do is put out a garbage product for years and seem very comfortable with that, the whole sentiment of you must stay here is not nearly as high as it is when you are actually trying to win baseball games and trying to be respectful to your fans and show them that you care about them and their experience in dealing with this beloved team. I obviously don't want them to move, but those threats will feel so much more empty in this scenario. I mean, I think if you really want your new thing, when you want to threaten to move a team, be really, really freaking good. Because that is going to get people to say,
to move a team,
please don't leave.
Don't buy the entire sports distribution, television distribution system in your city, which Reinsdorf just did.
Right. So, you know, he's obviously the guy has some business acumen of some sort, but I believe it is fading. I don't see a world where Reinsdorf gets what he wants here. I mean, he's just got nothing going for him at this moment. And it's just such an incredibly greedy and unrealistic ask. It's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it will happen very far down the road under new ownership. But, you know, we are very close to a constant sell the team scenario, and bring it on. Bring it on.
No, we can't have the big signs about sell the team now, because there aren't enough people in the stands to hold the signs up.
Well, that's,
you
know, true.
There aren't enough. You got to have four people. You got to have like two at each end of the banner, maybe even one in the middle to hold. There aren't five people in any section of the stands. So he's safe from that.
We're about out of time, but I want to touch on one positive statistic. So back in the day, SportsCenter used to do fielding percentages for fans on foul balls. You know, I'm sure it was mostly a joke, but they pretended like it was real. It was always a fun thing to see each season.
And there was a real nice catch on Wednesday. And the guy had a lot of room, you know, because there's nobody around him to battle with, but nice catch.
Well, that's setting up what my point is. I think White Sox fans are going to be at the top of the list for the same reason that the Expos fans were at the top of the list year in and year out. And that's because almost every ball hit in the stands is deemed a hit, because there's nobody there to catch it and nobody there to field it. So I do think that there's a good chance that at the end of this season, White Sox fans will have the best fielding percentage of fans in the entirety of Major League Baseball. Now, they're going to give up a lot more hits, a lot more foul balls going into sections with zero people in them. But that's okay, because that's not what we're judging here. We're judging. And if a guy already made a great catch, we're well on our way. So I do think the silver lining in all this is the fans are going to come out looking like pretty solid foul ball fielders at the end of the year.
I got to say this, Ref. Not only are our fellow White Sox fans long suffering and very, very mentally tough, I think by and large, they're pretty good fielders.
I think so too.
I think so. I mean, you know, I live and you used to live blocks from Wrigley Field. Cubs fans, they don't even know it's a baseball out there. They're just hey, boy, beer that I only have to pay $25
for. Yeah, they don't catch anything. They don't catch anything over there.
White Sox fans, boy, they're alert. They're on it. Whether kids or old people, no. And as I say, you got an entire section to yourself. So you're not the tough catches. You know, there's five or six guys reaching up and the hands are way up in the air. It's like being a hockey goalie who's screened. It's rough. But now there's no worry about that.
Oh, you're going to have so much space. You're not even going to have to call it. You know, you're not even going to have to yell, you know, I got it or ball or mine, because you're the only one there. It's going to be a real comfortable fielding atmosphere for White Sox fans throughout the season.
On the other hand, humiliation if you drop it.
It's true. I mean, there are a few things I love more at a baseball game than a foul ball going into the stands and hearing the like, when it goes horribly wrong and bounces from top deck all the way down to the field level. That's one of my favorite things of the crowd experience of a baseball game. But I think the White Sox aren't going to have a lot of that. I'm looking forward to the fans really reining in these balls. Plus, if your whole thing was, I'm going to go to the game to get the milkshake, and then you find out that they're reserving the milkshakes for VIPs who probably aren't attending, you're going to be extra motivated to go home with the souvenir. You're going to get out there and you're going to get your baseball so you can take that home. That is all the time we have for today. Do you have any very quick final thoughts before we sign off?
Nope. I think we covered it.
All right. Well, we will see you soon for another episode of Sharing Socks, where we will hopefully have at least four wins. But I wouldn't hold your breath. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Sharing Socks.